In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, June 4th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And this is one of my favorite hours of the week, and we're back after a one-week hiatus. Last week, there was no Federal News Countdown because I had Mark Forman and Karen Evans in studio for the entire 2 hours, and you can hear that conversation, as a lot of people have, according to the number of downloads and hits that page has gotten. It's at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But the Countdown is back this week, and pleased to have on the Countdown two people who, off the air, I goad and tease mercilessly, and yet I'm happy to have them on the air with me today. Mark Amtower.
Who he goads and teases on air.
Well, that's true. Well, here's the thing. When it comes to your stuff, first of all, I make two mistakes on a consistent basis. I always forget the name of your website, which I don't know why, but I just
have... I have several.
Okay, well, what are they?
Federal Direct, Government Market Master, Gov Facility, Epiphany Book.
Okay, it's the Federal Direct one that I always, I don't know why I have a mental block against that.
Maybe he needs to unify and simplify a little bit.
Well, there you go. And that's Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, who we'll meet in a moment. And the other one is, I always call your radio show by the wrong name. I always call it Amtower Off Kilter. And I don't do it intentionally. It's just...
It's basically the same premise.
Well, that's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. Amtower Off Center is on when?
Monday at noon.
Okay. And we rerun it during the week, too. But those are all archived at federalnewsradio.com. So that's the Amtower factor. And my other guest this week is Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. And what's the executive editor do? Why are you higher up than, say, me, for example?
That's a hard question to answer sometimes.
It's because one is bigger than zero.
There you go. I'll say that part of my job is beyond being the reporter and being out and about and trying to understand what's going on the news is helping to shape the news coverage of Federal News Radio by working with people like yourself, like Tom and Amy in the morning and Ruben and Scott and Chris Dorbeck in the afternoon and make sure that we are meeting our needs of our listeners and our readers online.
Okay. There's very few people with his bandwidth to do that.
And you can't be that important, though, because you don't have your own Miller Insider blog that turns into a radio show. So you obviously are not.
I think it's that's another message we'll take offline.
The biggest heavyweight person on the radio station. Well, at any rate, gentlemen, you've chosen a lot of great stories, and they are the premise of this, in case you've never heard of the Federal News Countdown before, is each week I get two people of the caliber and quality of these two, actually usually it's much higher, to come into the studio and choose what they think are the most important federal news stories of the week. And since it is a countdown, we start with
number three.
The third most important news story of the week, as chosen by Mark Amtower, is a blog post by Tom Shoup at GovExec, and the headline on this blog post is Teleworking Through the Snow. And Tom writes that during the huge snowstorms that blanketed the Washington area last winter, employees in at least one agency teleworked their way through the days-long government shutdown, and he refers to what went on at the NLRB, the National Labor Relations Board. Why do you think this was a big deal, Mark? I mean, however many months out after the big snowstorm.
It's not exactly breaking news, but the telework issue has been with us since the first center opened back in 94 or 95, and the lack of acceptance at certain managerial levels I find ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you mentioned the telework centers, because a lot of times, I think almost all the time, when we talk about telework in the government, people's perception, at least, and most of the conversation about it revolves around people working at home, when in fact there are, 13 or 14 telework centers
in the immediate vicinity.
In the D.C. area, within an hour and a half driving distance of D.C.
Right. But all outside the Beltway.
That managers could at least guide their employees toward working at the telework center, where you would have more of a sense and more of a level of comfort that work is being done rather than, you know, ordering something from Amazon. And so I wonder why there hasn't been more publicity, more effort focused around making people, not just the managers, but also the potential teleworkers, aware of the merits of the telework centers.
Well, the merits of telework centers are huge, and they've been with us for a long time, but it doesn't get news because it's not sexy.
But you know, why aren't people talking about it?
I mean, Tom Shoup talks about it. Warren Master talks about it. I read about it in government federal
Computer Week.
No, public manager. Sorry,
but why isn't it sinking in then? If people are talking about it in the trades, why isn't that crossing over?
Because you know, Jason blames people of my generation. I'm not an ageist, just to be clear. He's not an ageist, but I'm a mid-range boomer, we are resistant to change. I don't want my cheese to move. But, you know, I've been home-based for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can work there.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, when you're a manager, you really don't feel like you want somebody out of your sight.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it is a generational thing, I think, just in the fact that you have people who grew up a certain way. This is the way we work. You show up, you come to work, you put your tie on every morning. And until, you know, there's some change in that generation, and there's, I use the term, the people our age, Francis, you know, in the early 40s,
mm-hmm.
Until we're in our 50s and really are in that high-level manager role in government, that's when I think, because you'll then get all these, what they call digital natives, the 20s, and they'll be in their 30s, and then you'll have the new group coming up, and it's just a generational thing. I think
but
that's
that
the
doesn't sound
scary.
Really, that's not a terrific prognosis for the future of telework for the next 5 to 10 years.
Maybe not.
But the point is that it's gotten better each year. There's still a big push from this administration.
Mm-hmm.
So things happen very slowly in government. I mean, I love the analogy of turning a battleship doesn't turn on a dime.
Yeah.
It turns on a big wide circle that takes hours to turn. So the expectations are there. It makes perfect sense. But again, it's people, and the people's the hardest part.
Tom Shoup's blog post headline, Teleworking Through the Snow, is posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And it's also up on the Federal News Countdown page, as well as all of the stories that we're talking about on the Countdown page, Countdown today, available there. Jason, your story number 3 is written by our own Max Kakis from federalnewsradio.com. And the headline is GOP lawmakers pitch Fed workforce reduction bill. This doesn't surprise anybody that's been paying attention to the politics of the federal government for a long time. And Max writes, Republican lawmakers think the best way to solve the nation's budget deficit is to cut down on the number of federal workers. But is this the best way to accomplish the goal? H.R. 5348, the Federal Workforce Reduction Act, is part of a package of bills dubbed Cut Spending Now, introduced by minority members of the House Budget Committee. I mean, do we really think this has the potential to go anywhere?
See, I think it's less about having the potential to go anywhere and one more in another long line of attacks is such a bad word, but really actions by Congress that are really aimed at the federal employees and the federal workforce.
Uh-huh.
And I think this is just a perfect example of what we've seen. The attempts to freeze pay that have failed both in the House and the Senate. This bill, people calling on questioning how much money federal workers make, and the USA Today article that we talked about on our station a number of months ago, comparing federal and private sector and saying how much more money federal workers make.
Yeah.
I think this is just the latest example of the continued bad press that federal workers get and many would argue don't deserve, unfairly get, because it's an easy target, because it's the bureaucracy. Get the bureaucracy. And I think that's the problem. And I think that I chose as my the number 3 story just because of what it does. Let's reduce the workforce. Let's not replace retiring workers. How silly is that?
Mm-hmm.
You have an workforce that is on the other side of 50, you have the retirement numbers we've been hearing forever, the tsunami that's coming, and this is another one of those bills of people who I think don't understand the government and what it really does. They just see it for what it is, for what they, a very narrow view of bureaucracy and wasteful, which is silly.
Max, in this story, talked to John Salamone, who is now with Federal Management Partners in Alexandria and a former executive director of the Chief Human Capital Officers Council at OPM during President Bush's Bush 43 administration. And you would think if somebody was predisposed toward trying to shrink the government, it might be somebody. I'm not speaking for John personally, but somebody from the Bush administration who talked about that from time to time. And he said the bill, quote here, is it's an interesting concept, but I'm not sure how realistic it is at this point. And so
and the fact is that the congressmen and women who introduced the bill are not even part of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee,
mm-hmm.
which this bill would have to go through to get there. So it's basically, many believe, and I think Max reported this toward the end of his story in some ways, that the bill in many ways is dead on arrival.
Yeah.
It's just another attention getter. We wrote about it. Other publications wrote about it. And I think it's just, that's why I put it on there as just an example of the, just the actions that Congress is taking that seem kind of out of balance in many ways.
Wyoming Republican Cynthia Loomis is the one of the principal co-sponsors of H.R. 5348, the Federal Workforce Reduction Act, and you can read more about her. Read the act itself at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Max Kakis's story headline, GOP lawmakers pitch federal workforce reduction bill, is Jason Miller's story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. That means we're ready for story number 2 from Jason Miller and also from Mark Amtower as we continue with the Federal News Countdown in moments on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Plane's fueled. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate. A plane ready for takeoff.
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog now.
Which push-to-talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Plus, now get push-to-talk in the BlackBerry Tour smartphone. Buy one today for $99.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
A new ocean observing system from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration now offers mariners free real-time information on water level, wind, and weather conditions for the Sabine Neches waterway of Beaumont and Port Arthur, Texas. The so-called port system provides observations of tides, currents, water and air temperature, barometric pressure, and wind speed, gusts, and direction through an easy-to-use web portal and by phone. NOAA officials say the system will significantly reduce the risk of vessel groundings and increase the amount of cargo moved through the waterway by enabling mariners to safely use nearly every inch of a channel. The system also allows big ships to time their arrivals and departures more efficiently. There are 19 such other port systems located throughout the nation.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for this afternoon's Dorabeck Insider. How do you influence people? We're going to talk to the author of the book, The Power of Pull. He'll tell you about how small moves, smartly made, can set big things into motion. And are there too many federal contracts out there? We'll get insights from Steve Kelman, the Harvard professor and former OFPP administrator. I bet you he has thoughts. All that and much more this afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thank you for listening to the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. And this week, my guests on the countdown are Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller and Amtower. I've listed you on the Federal News Radio website on the In Depth page like this. Federal Contracting and B2G Impresario. You like that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Impresario.
So, yeah, I'm going to...
Does that mean I have to learn how to spell it?
No, you don't have to. I can coach you on that if you insist, but I just thought you might like that better than what I was going to write, which I can't say on the air. All right, so we've done story number three for both of Mark Amtower and Jason Miller, and you can see those at federalnewsradio.com. That means we're up to...
Number two!
Second most important federal news story of the week, according to Jason Miller, was published in GovExec. Amelia Gruber's headline, Panel Endorses Performance-Based Pay for Defense Intelligence Employees. An independent panel's concluded that the Defense Department should move forward with its performance-based pay system for civilian intelligence employees after making significant adjustments in implementation to address issues such as employee mistrust of the ratings process. And as I saw this story, Jason, I said, here we go again. I mean, the idea is fine. I don't think anybody disagrees with the idea, but it's all the devil's in the details, I guess. What's different this time around?
Well, I think there's a couple things that's going on here. Number one, we've not had a actually good news story about pay for performance in the government in years.
Right.
And I think
nobody's ever talked about
that
it.
You have an independent panel such as NAPA, who is very highly respected both in this administration and in the government community, saying, actually, this is pretty good. This actually works. Mm-hmm. Okay. This has some potential. I think that's a step. Because I think this administration, while they don't talk much about it and definitely do not call it pay for performance, definitely wants to head in that direction. If you heard what OPM Director John Barry said and some of the federal hiring reforms that you're starting to see kind of come out, mm-hmm. I think you're going to see some kind of performance-based pay system. Now, they won't call it pay for performance because that's a dirty word already. But I think that you're going to see some stuff. And I think here you have an example of one that is working, that seems to be on the right track. And it says, you know, we made some mistakes and we've corrected them. We're figuring things out. And I think that's why I chose that as number two.
Mm-hmm. The Defense Civilian Intelligence Personnel System is soundly designed, and there's no evidence it contributes to problems with diversity. A panel of the National Academy of Public Administration found in a report to Congress and Defense Secretary Robert Gates, Amelia Gruber writing that in GovExec. I mean, the definition of insanity, Amtower, is you do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. And the intention is good, as I said to Jason, but here we go again. I mean, they're not going to call it pay for performance, okay? But it's pay for performance, right?
It is, but, you know, when NAPA, and I don't know how many, you know, maybe your government people know, but those who don't know NAPA, NAPA's staffed largely by senior executives loaned to them from agencies. So these are people who understand the ins and outs of government. So this is senior government people saying, hey, this can work. And these are extremely bright, capable lifers.
Mm-hmm. There's have we heard anything about what the unions thought about this?
Not yet.
And obviously these employees will not be unionized employees.
Right, because they're intelligence.
Right.
So the unions actually may not have any, they may have an opinion, but their opinion is maybe irrelevant because, as you said, intelligence employees are not unionized.
Well, but the NSPS employees weren't unionized either, and the union certainly didn't hesitate to weigh in there.
Sure, they did put a lot of pressure on DOD to change. One of the things that's interesting also about the DSIPs is that fact that this report was called for in the fiscal 2010 Defense Authorization Bill, and then, suspended the DSIPs program until this NAPA report came out.
Okay.
Now DOD has until November 1st for getting in place new policies and a suggested phase-in approach to on a component-by-component basis. So this is this is another area here where, okay, we have the report. We know where we are. Okay, now DOD has 6 months now or 5 months to figure out where we're heading, where they're heading with it. Mm-hmm. And a lot can happen over those 5 months. So I think it's going to be really key to see what happens. I think it says August here. The Defense Secretary has till August to respond to this report.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be interested to see what that response is. How does the NSPS issues, challenges, debacle, whatever you want to call it, how does that affect how they move forward with DSIPs. The other thing that I think is interesting about this story is you do have pockets of pay for performance that have been successful.
Mm-hmm.
GAO uses it. They call it pay banding. And I think this just is another example of, hey, this is possible in government, and let's see how we can make this more successful, more more as a model for maybe others.
Jason Miller, story number two this week on the Federal News Countdown is from GovExec, a story by Amelia Gruber with the headline, Panel Endorses Performance-Based Pay for Defense Intelligence Employees. And you can read that and all of the stories on our Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Back for Mark Amtower, story number two, when this week's Federal News Countdown continues.
Radio, I'm Kelly O'Donnell. The nation's unemployment rate is down 0.2 points, falling to 9.7% in May. But CNBC's Trish Regan says most of the gain isn't here to stay.
The majority of these jobs really came from these temporary census hire workers. You're not seeing that the overall economy is really starting to add any jobs.
Stocks tumbled on that news. The Dow is off more than 200 points. Even as waves of tar balls crashed into the white sands of the Florida panhandle today, BP engineers adjusted a new cap over the Gulf oil gusher. President Obama is in Louisiana at this hour for a briefing. Earlier today, Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen said he expects the containment rate to increase as leaking oil vents are sealed.
We need to caution against over-optimism here, but in general, progress is being made.
And McDonald's is recalling 12 million drinking glasses with Shrek characters on them after the feds found them tainted with a toxic heavy metal. I'm Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
Your child has a fever, and of course you worry. You're a mom. That's your job. But there's no need to worry about which medicine to choose. Fact. Children's Advil brings your child's fever down faster than Children's Tylenol. And Children's Advil keeps that fever down longer. Nothing's proven better on fever, not even Children's Motrin. For relief you can trust, look for Children's Advil in the cough cold aisle now.
Among OTC pain relievers, brands are trademarks of their respective owners based on fever below 100 degrees.
One sale fits all, now through Saturday at the JCPenney Appreciation Sale. Because everything in the store is an extra 15% off. Wall to wall, floor to floor, the whole store. No exclusions. And the doors are opening early at 8 a.m. Saturday. Save on everything for her, for him, for kids. All shoes, home, and jewelry. One for all, and all for an extra 15% off. Find more at jcp.com. New look, new day, who knew? JCPenney. Sephora stores inside JCPenney not participating. Offers end June 5th.
Checking your daily TSP ticker, the latest numbers from June 3rd, 2010. The G Fund is unchanged at $13.30. The F Fund loses 0.01 at $13.81. The C Fund rises 0.05 at $13.18. The S Fund moves up 0.17 at $17.72. And the I Fund picks up 0.05 at $16.41. Some gains for your L Funds. The 2040 up 0.06 at $15.48. The 2030 rises 0.05 at $15.35. 2020 up 0.04 at $15.25. The 2010 gains 0.01 at $15.36. And the L Income gains 0.01 at $14.01. Check your rates anytime, every day on federalnewsradio.com. Dimitri Sotis, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week on Agency of the Month, brought to you by ITT Defense.
The FAA has launched a quiz for people who visit its website. They hope it'll improve runway safety. Director of Runway Safety, Wes Timmons.
We're recording all of the results in the quiz. We're looking for trends to say, in general, people that take this quiz aren't as familiar as they should be with these kinds of signs or these runway markings. And so we will use that then to highlight a campaign. We can eliminate a tremendous amount of runway incursions just by that one simple act.
I'm Ruben Gomez.
The following is a commercial message.
Who did the FAA select to develop its next-generation air traffic management system to manage 87,000 flights every day? ITT. ITT Defense has a single focus, deliver innovative technology solutions to governments worldwide. From next-generation imaging that integrates space, airborne, ground, and soldier sensors to energy systems that disrupt the enemy, ITT has the technology and experience to address the most pressing mission challenges. ITT Defense, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Here's Colonel Kevin Foster, Office of the Secretary of Defense, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by SafeNet.
For DOD to have a cloud computing environment that perpetuates a real-time information sharing environment that's flexible, agile, secure, have single sign-on, a standardized CNA.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
From defending our nation's borders to protecting the environment, cloud computing services can support your mission and serve the American public. Trust your information in the cloud with SafeNet's data-centric solutions that enable security, privacy, and compliance. SafeNet Solutions allows agencies to share sensitive data throughout the information lifecycle. From the battle space to the White House, SafeNet has been at the core of data protection for more than 25 years. Visit safenet-inc.com/government.
Video teleconferencing solutions are changing the way people communicate by breaking down the walls and enabling face-to-face communication, regardless of distance or environment. Tanberg developed Break Down the Walls to provide a window into the ways government, education, and healthcare organizations are using VTC solutions to help them operate more effectively and efficiently, and the ways video solutions can be used to address challenges facing public sector organizations today. Learn more at breakdownthewalls.com.
Profile America, Friday, June 4th. In 1940, a major question facing the nation was, how do we make tires without rubber? War clouds were gathering and the supply of natural rubber from Asia was drying up. 70 years ago this week, the first synthetic rubber tire was displayed in Akron, Ohio. It was made by the B.F. Goodrich Company from readily available ingredients, soap, gas, petroleum, and air, greatly helping the war effort. Now, natural rubber is used once again to make a huge variety of tires, from lawnmowers to giant earth-moving equipment. Each year in the U.S., we wear out many millions of tires. The U.S. makes over $13 billion worth of tires annually and imports an additional $10 billion worth. Profile America is in its 14th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Hi, I'm Renthia Rost from GEICO. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington have been in our community more than 80 years. To ensure that the youth of today will be full partners in a better tomorrow, give a child the gift of a membership for 2010. And while you're at it, reach out and volunteer to mentor a child in your community. Go to www.bgcgw.org and tell them the GEICO sent you. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, where we count down the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by my experts in the federal space. And this week, those experts are Mark Amtower and Jason Miller. And Amtower, your story number two this week is from Washington Technology, and the headline is Top 100 Companies Face an Ever-Changing Market. There's a little bit of churn on the top 100 list this year.
Little bit of churn, but number one, it's my favorite WashTech issue, and WashTech to me is, you know, it's one of the things that I read as soon as it shows up. It pops up on one of my computers as the homepage. I read it regularly. The top 100 is there. There's a lot of churn. Lockheed announced right after it got number one again that it was spinning off two units. Northrop's moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, and it just came out 2 days ago that one of the reasons they chose Virginia was they also got a contract renewed with the state of Virginia.
Huh.
No collusion.
What a coincidence
is. That's never happened before.
And I wonder if they have any contracts with the state of Maryland or the District of Columbia.
They got some offices in Maryland. That's about it.
Okay. Oh, the cynicism is just so thick in here right now.
But, you know, I love the top 100. I like lists, first of all. You know, you've got some new players here. There's a lot of companies that are doing work through the Agency for International Development that haven't been on the list before that are here. And this is top 100 contractors is defined by WashTec, which means it's IT or IT services related or management services related. It's not across the board. We're not talking tanks and stuff.
All right. Last year's countdown had SAIC at number 7, moving up this year to number 5. Number 4 is Raytheon this year, also up from 5.
You know, Francis used to do country radio too, right?
WMZQ. Yeah.
Down from number five last year, number 2 last year to number 3 this year is Boeing. And Northrop Grumman this year at number 2 up from number 3. And Lockheed Holding for the second year in a row at number 1.
Do you have a long distance dedication?
I could probably get one out of this list. But I am surprised at the amount of churn that there is. Once you get out of the top 10, most of the top 10 stays pretty similar.
Top 20 is pretty similar.
Yeah. You get further down and there's a lot of moving around.
Well, you know, one of the intriguing things for me this year is two companies near the bottom, Concurrent and Carahsoft, both new to the top 100. And when you consider that Carahsoft is only just turned 6 years old, and they're now number 99 on the list. That's some rapid growth, boys and girls. And this is basically, and here's the cool thing, they're basically a product company. They don't sell services, they sell stuff.
Some of the big movers as I'm scrolling down through this, Mantech moving from number 48 last year to number 31 this year. Aptus goes from 50 to 35.
And Aptus is another cool story. Yeah, 10 years old.
What's the story there?
Well, they used to be PlanetGov. 10 years ago, I was making fun of them.
Well, 10 years ago, you were making fun of a lot of people.
Well, it's what I do.
SGT going from 62 to 42 this year. Well,
that's a good story, too. That's a small business and a former 8A. Who's now moved into the large business. Very similar to what happened with, if you guys remember a company you do, I'm sure probably Mark, RSIS. And they eventually sold out for a little bit of money.
One of RSIS's spinoffs is in the top 100. And I forget which one because I don't have my list in front of me.
Comtech goes from 81 to 50. That's a pretty big move.
Yep. CDW is still in the middle of the stack, but they're another interesting story because, again, product-driven, but moving into the services related to the specific product lines that they carry.
Another big move for Immix Group from 93 to 58. That's a pretty hefty pop.
They're you know, Steve and Jeff run a great company, period.
All right. ICF International from 99 to 66. There are a bunch that we're seeing mid-range that weren't even on the list last year.
Well, I think what
Fluor, F-L-U-O-R Corporation, number 47 this year, not even posting last year.
I think what you're seeing is a couple things happening here. The mergers and acquisitions that are going on across the IT community are really having an effect on which companies. So that's why you have certain companies that have gotten bigger and certain companies no longer there. I mean, think about Pro. Dell bought Pro. That's a huge buy. EDS got bought by HP.
Everything Ross starts gets bought because it's good business.
It's probably not a bad model.
So I think that's why you're seeing some of the new companies pop in there. Now, partly because, one, there's less competition, but there's fewer companies going after. I think the competition is still just as great. But the other piece of that is you have more, you have the mergers and acquisitions are taking away those companies that were once number 23 and 28. Now they're just number 12 or something,
right,
where you have that combined. The other thing that really stood out to me among this was the fact that the number of dollars went up by 10 billion from 119.6 billion to 129.9 billion. I mean, that's a pretty hefty increase in a time when, you know, procurement has been under such pressure in the Obama administration when procurement has, you know, we got to cut, we got to save money, we got to figure things, we got to do it cheaper. I thought that was fascinating.
Well, that part really doesn't factor in that way. From my perspective, it's the top tier of companies taking just much more of the money that's available. Period. And that's one of the reasons the M&A happens. Companies are purchased because they own niche technologies, they own very specific contracts, etc. So the really big companies are going to absorb them to try to dominate whatever that niche or agency is.
Which is what CGI did with Stanley to get into defense intelligence, for instance.
Exactly.
Mark Amtower, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is Top 100 Companies Face an Ever-Changing Market by Nick Wakeman in Washington Technology, and you can read that at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, along with all of the stories we're counting down on this week's Federal News Countdown. Mark Amtower and Jason Miller choosing the stories that they believe are the most important federal news stories of the week. We're up to story number one from each of Jason and Amtower, and you'll hear the number one stories of the week next on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
Worried about the internet routing table? You should be. Here's Doug Montgomery of NIST, who's trying to fix a big cyber problem with a solution called RPKI.
An ISP network re-originated what looks like probably the whole routing table, but about 10% of that leaked out to the internet, maybe 30,000 some routes. And the RPKI is designed exactly to address that issue.
To hear the entire show, log on to federalnewsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future. Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller.
Matt Coos, the director of Federal Network Security at the Homeland Security Department, patch management. What's the deal? Why is this so hard?
You're looking at pretty large numbers of assets, and I don't think a lot of folks have a good grasp on what they have, for one. You got a lot of different OS types and applications out there, so you've got to keep track of a lot of different patch releases, and you've got the testing cycles, which may or may not be very mature in different organizations, and that can take some time. But that's really why the automation piece is so key.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown, and we are counting down the most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller and Mark Amtower, who's the host of Amtower Off Center, every Monday at noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, among other roles that he plays in the business-to-government world. And I like impresario, which is what I credentialed you as at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. So I think I'm going to stick with that from now on.
Go for it.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
All right. So we've covered story number three and story number two for each one of you. That means we're at
number one.
The top federal news story of the week, the most important one, according to Jason Miller, is from federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Bill Would Give DHS Emergency Cyber Powers. And this one generated a lot of traffic for us this week because it got picked up on the Drudge Report under a less than flattering picture of Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano. But this is the kind of thing that makes people squirm in some quarters when they think about the possibility that at some point DHS could say, all right, we're in charge of the internet now.
Well, what's interesting is again, this isn't one of those where I say I'm using this story as the bigger, broader cybersecurity. But on this one specifically, this is an idea that came out previously. It's not going to go anywhere in Congress. Nobody wants DHS to have that power to turn off the networks, to turn off the internet. That's silly. And the other, I think what Senator Lieberman, Senator Collins are trying to do is really get some some attention paid to the critical infrastructure. If you put something out there, then industry goes, no, no, we don't want that to happen. We'll do better. We promise.
Right.
So I think that's my guess of what's, I think, going on back there. But I think the idea, you know, we talk about it a lot on our station, cybersecurity. It's a big issue. I just heard General Alexander from the head of the new DoD Cyber Command talk.
We're going to have some of that on the program on Monday.
All right. Very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another cyber thing that went on earlier this week. We have the Congresswoman Watson and Congressman Jim Langevin's cybersecurity bills get folded into the defense authorization bill.
Mm-hmm.
A lot is just happening. There's a lot of movement and momentum to change the way the federal government does cybersecurity. We get continuous monitoring, frequently asked questions that came out from NIST. So I feel like that this one story is just a representation of just everything cyber.
Now, Susan Zeleniak from Verizon was on in the first hour of the show, and she says that agencies are getting a good sense of the idea that cybersecurity and all kinds of security need to be woven into their applications and their networks and on and on and on instead of being bolted on. When Mark Forman was here last week, he talked about that. I don't mean to use the word incessantly because it sounds like a negative connotation, but that was, he beat that drum repeatedly, and I think with good reason, that it's not only better, more secure, but cheaper to have this stuff woven in.
And that's something that both Mark and Karen Evans, their OMB administrator for eGov and IT, have beat that drum. It's up to the not just the agencies to require it, but the companies to do it.
Yeah.
You can't think about, oh, I guess we should secure that after you've written a billion lines of code.
Yeah.
Isn't that what duct tape's for?
I think that's just for your front door. When
thank you, Mr. Solution Man.
Well, yeah, this is my job.
Now, you had a story, though, about cybersecurity that you were going to kick in and didn't have a chance to because some of the other ones you picked. But talk about that a little bit because I think that's scary and funny at the same time.
It's both, yeah. Suzanne Kubota, the internet editor here, posted this earlier today, Cyber Challenge winner, with the U.S. Cyber Challenge underway, all eyes are on last year's winner, 17-year-old Michael Coppola. The Cyber Challenge is looking for 10,000 young Americans with skills to fill the cyber security ranks using a series of competitions in various areas of cybersecurity. Last year, Michael won by doing something no one else had. He hacked the system, the point system, and he skewed it. So, you know, this is Captain Kirk at the Academy.
That's right. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, you got to give the guy credit.
Yeah.
I mean, he demonstrated. He made a very serious point.
One does not expect the expected when you're doing this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do not build systems that are secure from the get-go, there's always a back door. Because if you're retrofitting, you got to bolt stuff on. Well, you can unbolt that stuff.
Yeah, and the bad guys can figure out the one that you missed because you didn't even know it existed in the first place.
One of the things that General Keith Alexander, the head of DoD Cyber Command, said yesterday was, you know, we're still dealing with threats that are known, unknown, but more importantly, we're still dealing with patch management issues. We're still dealing with poor situational awareness. We're still dealing with the same problems we were dealing with 5, 7, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is the hackers or the nation states or organized crime or terrorists or whomever are much more sophisticated and can move much more quickly
mm-hmm.
than DoD or any federal agency or for that matter, most companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think getting back to the cyber challenge and the hacker, they probably weren't thinking that why would anyone want to hack this? So their security probably was, you know, a 5 out of 10. It should have been an 8 out of 10. And I think sometimes you get that. Well, who's going to want to hack a database of, procurement numbers or dollar figures, whatever you name it, and then well, that's a backdoor to something else, and you don't look at the whole picture.
Yeah, I'm going to do something I don't normally do on the countdown, and that is I'm going to have the last word on this. The thing that I think is the scariest about all of this is the idea that you can take those procurement numbers or whatever you're talking about and change them however you want. And make them look inaccurate. And that's one of the things that we were talking about with Karen and Mark last week, which is having data be transparent is great, but if it's not secure and people take numbers and do all these mashups and things that, that the administration is saying we want people to do with this transparent data. If the underlying data is not clean, then all of the assumptions that are drawn from that and all of the potential entrepreneurial uses and all of that that are drawn from them are not going to work either. Jason Miller's story about cybersecurity from federalnewsradio.com is his number. It's not your story. You didn't write it, but it's your story number one of the week on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. That means we have just Amtower's story left, his number one story of the week left to cover, and we'll do that when In Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Plane's fueled. Are we good to go?
Yeah, I think we're good.
Baggage?
Empty crate, a plane ready for takeoff.
Guys, we got an empty dog carrier here.
And your moment of truth.
We need all eyes on a missing dog now.
Which push-to-talk network do you want to keep business flying?
Nothing at ticketing.
Nothing at the gate.
Got a 20 on your missing passenger.
Let me guess. Food court.
Roger that.
When you want the largest push-to-talk coverage area in the nation, you want Verizon. Plus, now get push-to-talk on the BlackBerry Tour smartphone. Buy one today for $99.99 after $100 mail-in rebate debit card and get the second one free. Each phone requires new 2-year activation on a voice plan with data pack $29.99 or higher. Early termination and other fees per line apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m.
This is the sound of a data center. While all data center networks might sound alike, they're not. You see, most are horribly complex and expensive to manage. Now, this is a Juniper network. Hear the difference? That's the sound of Juniper's simplified, automated, and secure solutions efficiently humming along, delivering you better performance at lower costs using less power. Music to my ears, and proof that while all data center networks might sound alike, they don't all work alike. Juniper Networks. Learn more at thenewnetworkishere.com.
Listen next week for the Business of Government Hour's Conversation with Author series, exploring ideas for improving government effectiveness. What is cloud computing? How can states use process improvement methods to transform service delivery? And how to use geographic information systems to enhance citizen engagement? The show will profile 3 IBM Center reports and explore these questions with Dr. David Wild, Dr. Vicki Grant, and Professor Sukumar Ganapati. Join host Michael Keegan next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Celebrate achievements with Affirm over lunch as we recognize the winners of Affirm's 2010 Leadership Awards. Join them on Thursday, June 17th at 11:30 at the Capitol Hilton as they salute the accomplishments of 11 individuals who have made a difference to government this year. That's June 17th from 11:30 to 2:15 at the Capitol Hilton at 1001 16th Street Northwest. Register today at www.affirm.org.
Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I just kind of blew a gasket during the break there. Not directed toward either of our guests. Amtower just is getting a kick out of that for some. I'm glad we don't have studios, cameras in the studio.
That'd probably be best, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing. We are up to story number one from Mark Amtower on the Federal News Countdown. It is from Fed Times, and the headline is IG Invest. investigators keep busy with fleet card fraud by Tom Spoth. And Jason just mentioned in his story number one about cybersecurity, General Alexander saying we're doing the same thing over and over again that we've been doing for the last 7 to 10 years. It's the same thing with these cards, isn't it, Mark? I mean, this is the same kind of deal.
It is and it's not. Number one, the only time the cards hit the news, like anything else in the government, is when something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about 11 people here, the fleet card accounting for, if I recall correctly, somewhere around $4.5 billion in FY09. I haven't gotten the exact figures, but that's about it. So we're not talking an extraordinary number of people, but it is an oversight issue, and part of it's congressional because nobody has mandated level three processing. Level three processing would bring to the table a granular report going to every agency point of contact, the people that cardholders report to on their card usage. Hello. If you see what's going on, you see somebody made 92 purchases for a billion gallons of gas in a 6-hour period, you're liable to pick it up.
What is wrong with people? I mean, I'm amazed by the brazenness of people who think they can do stuff and nobody's ever going to notice. What does that say though about the different employees' perceptions of accountability in the government if they think they really do are not going to get caught?
Well, I mean, you look at the punishment too. You know, some of these guys, you know, maybe had to pay back the money in $6 and they had their sentence suspended.
A former Energy Department employee repeatedly made multiple gasoline purchases on the same day that exceeded the capacity of the tank of the employee's vehicle. The employee was sentenced to 3 years in prison with all but 25 days suspended and ordered to pay nearly $13,000 in restitution for the thefts. I mean, that's not insignificant.
Let's keep in mind, though, as Mark said at the very beginning, these are 11 people were arrested, 12 indicted, and 11 pleaded guilty. That's not a lot of people considering how many purchase cards are out there.
That's a fair point.
There are so many people who do the right thing with purchase cards, and I think that while these people, why we keep having troubles, I think it's less about the people and more about what Mark just said, the processes. Like GAO has come out with reports after reports saying the purchase card program needs better oversight, it needs better control. And part of that issue is the lack of the ability of a Visa, MasterCard, whoever is providing those purchase cards to give data back to the government. And it's also the government's fault for not asking for that data, saying, if you want to be our purchase card, you will give us this data or you won't be our purchase card provider.
Jason, do we as journalists spend too much time talking about the bad stories? And I mean, it's the
dog bites man.
Yeah.
You know, you hear man bites dog, that's a good news story. One person used to tell me, 80,000 procurement actions went good today. Is that a story?
Right.
No, exactly. It's the one that went bad that's the story.
And that's what you expect, is that people will do their jobs. That's why that's not news. I get that part. But I wonder if sometimes maybe we don't blow the bad ones out of proportion or fail to report on the idea that the ratio is X to X. Because as you're mentioning, this is 11 out of however many.
No, I agree. I think that as journalists, we have to keep that in mind and have that part of the balance in our stories to say, oh, yeah, these 11 people did bad. But remember, there are 40,000, 70,000, whatever the number is, purchase cards out there.
Uh-huh. Mark Amtower, story number one on the Federal News Countdown this week is from the Federal Times by Tom Spoth. And the headline is IG Investigators Keep Busy with Fleet Card Fraud. Gentlemen, a fantastic Federal News Countdown. Nice job all around. All of the stories that Mark Amtower and Jason Miller chose are available for you to look at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. You'll also be able to hear my conversation with Susan Zeleniak of Verizon Federal later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Thank you for listening. A brand new countdown next Friday at 2 and a brand new in-depth program on Monday between 1 and 3 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Dorebeck Insider with Federal News Radio's Chris Dorebeck is next.